all of you out there in Radio Land, you're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device is locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Right now, we're recording inside KPTZ's world headquarters in the sweet little trailer in the parking lot of the Mountain View School. Of course, we're all looking forward to our long-promised move to Fort Worden. Stay tuned for that. It's great to see people in person again. Zoom is an excellent tool, but interviewing a real live guest is so much better. Our Town is all about our guests. We recount the stories of some of the amazing people who make up our community. Over time, we talk with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Think about it. Who do you see around you every day? Packs of kids on bikes are everywhere as the school year lurches forward. Our Town is a window on the people of Jefferson County, Washington. My guest today is Daryl Tidwell, president of the Jefferson County Hospital Hospice Foundation. But before we learn about the Hospice Foundation, let's get to know Daryl a little bit. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start at the beginning. Are you a local boy born and bred in Jefferson County?
No, I'm not. I was born in Hollywood.
Hollywood.
I'm one of the few people that you'll meet that was born in Hollywood many, many, many years ago.
Okay. And are you an only child?
No, I'm the youngest of four. And we were all raised in the Los Angeles area.
I always like to ask a little bit about the high school experience. It's such a remarkable, good, bad, indifferent time in people's lives. What was your experience? What do the other kids think of you?
I grew up in South Central LA, and being the youngest of four, I was accustomed to, you know, fitting in, as the youngest child always does. I went to Manual Arts High School, and because I come from a set of parents who very much valued education, it was a given that I would be going on to college following high school. So all throughout junior high and high school, it was stressed and demanded on me to be an honor student. And so to answer your question, I was the one who made the straight A's and was the student body person.
Okay. And your older siblings, did they also go on to university?
Oh, yes. All of us went on to university. All of us have an advanced college degree.
Did you go to the same school?
No. I had two sisters and a brother, all older. And my sister and I went to UCLA, and my brother and sister went to California State University, Los Angeles.
Okay. Did you live at home when you were going to college, or did you get a dorm or an apartment?
Interesting question. I moved when I was 17 and a half, which I'm when I started UCLA, and I lived off campus. I had my own apartment off campus at 17.
Wow, by yourself or with roommates?
No, by myself.
Wow, that's a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But I guess being the youngest kid, your parents were by then sort of used to the idea of letting go a bit.
My mother would say no, but but yeah, and they were very much on top of me in terms of how I was doing and making sure that my priorities were really straight around school.
Okay, and I take it you went on and got a degree and even an advanced degree, but in what?
I received a BA degree in psychology and immediately went on to grad school at UCLA in social work.
Okay. And I'm sure you had some jobs, you know, throughout summers and part-time or whatever, but what was your first so-called real job after you were graduated?
My first real job after receiving my master's degree in social work was I worked at County General Hospital in Los Angeles, California. And I was hired as a psychiatric social worker. And what that meant was providing counseling services to children, adolescents, and families. I worked in an outpatient clinic.
Okay, without being specific about names or anything, could you give an example of the kind of thing you might be called in on?
Well, we provided outpatient mental health services. So these were families that were coming in for parents primarily coming in for counseling to assist their child or their adolescent around their behavioral functioning.
So it might be something like there's a death in the family and you would be called in to assist the child getting over it psychologically?
Yeah, that's one example. County General Hospital was located in East Los Angeles, which unfortunately has a high crime rate. So just the mere fact of living in such a lower socioeconomic level environment where there's a crime rate, children are traumatized just by living in that neighborhood.
Right.
So we were seeing kids who were severely depressed. We saw kids who have a more severe diagnosis, mental health diagnosis of schizophrenia, psychosis. And our goal was to provide them outpatient services with the intent on preventing hospitalization if we could do that.
Okay. And of course, from reading or watching TV news, you see there's a lot of gang-related violence in an area like that. Mm-hmm. I guess you would encounter that
the
aftermath of that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough job.
It was a learning experience, and you know, as we all progress in our careers, we learn. And we pick up new skills and new ideas, and our career takes us into certain directions, like my career has.
Okay, and so how long did you stay with County General?
I was there probably about 7 to 8 years, and then I left and worked for a private hospital in a more affluent area, Santa Monica, Venice, for people who know the LA area. And I was specifically hired to direct and actually develop a program for the homeless mentally ill. This was during the 80s when homelessness was, at that time, kind of a new concept. So what we were doing is I was one of three people, and myself, a psychiatric nurse and a psychiatrist, and we would go around to different areas of Santa Monica and Venice, and where homeless people congregated, and attempt to develop a relationship with them, just a working relationship with them, to address their needs, their mental health needs, out on the street. And this was as a result of the county at that time wasn't able to provide outreach services on the street. And so we were a privately funded psychiatric team.
Okay, let me make sure I understand this. So you and your teammates would go to an area where there were, you know, tents or whatever, obvious homeless people, and would you just cold call and just approach them?
Absolutely. In Santa Monica and Venice at that time, there were a few social service programs that were providing feeding programs, other social service resources. And so we, over a week period, we have five different stops where we sort of stationed ourselves, and we began to befriend is not the right word, but we began to develop a trusting relationship with homeless mentally ill. And again, our target was really the homeless mentally ill, but when you're dealing with homeless people, it's a catch-all, because it's just a catch-all. Our goal was really to address the mental health needs of individuals, families, and also kids.
What resources could you offer these people?
We could offer them social service resources. We're connecting them to other resources that they hadn't heard about. We could provide them with some shelter resources at that time. And again, our sort of lane was really trying to address their mental health needs. And if we were working with someone who really was a danger to self or others, we would really explore involuntary hospitalization.
Hmm. Okay. And
so it was really doing services on the street.
All right. And I don't think you mentioned the name of this hospital in Santa Monica.
It was St. John's Hospital, very well known.
Yeah, that's a very well-known name, mm-hmm. That's for certain. In fact, it's often associated with stars and the more affluent people.
Absolutely. When I was there, our program was successful, and I was then sort of propelled into the role of developing funding for our program. And I had never been a fundraiser. And so I sort of delved into that whole arena. And I was successful. And the hospital asked me to leave that program and actually become a fundraiser for the hospital. So I joined the fundraising arm of St. John's Hospital. Hmm. And for about 6 months to 9 months, I had to straddle both positions. And so I'm smiling as I'm saying this to you because I remember many days where I was on a corner in Santa Monica. I was on a corner in Santa Monica talking to someone, and then that afternoon I was talking to a major donor at St. John's Hospital who had maybe four homes in the world.
Run the gamut.
It was quite a range.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be sometimes difficult to get your head around.
Mm-hmm.
All in one day. Wow. And how long did you end up staying with St. John's?
I was there about 8 years, and then I moved on to another private Catholic hospital in southeast L.A. County called St. Francis Hospital, and I developed a program called the Children's Counseling Center, and we provided outpatient mental health services to children, adolescents, and families who primarily had what in California is called Medi-Cal, but who have Medi-Cal as their primary insurance.
Okay. Now, when we were talking the other day, you mm-hmm. also mentioned around the same time, although I might have my chronology mixed up, you also worked for Tom Hayden, who some people know as Jane Fonda's husband at that time. Mm-hmm. When was that?
That was back when I was working at St. John's Hospital and doing homeless outreach. Tom Hayden was a California State Assemblyman at the time, and Santa Monica Venice was in his area. So in working with him around how do you get people to be hospitalized against their will and assisting him and primarily his office, I became his office's mental health consultant around any type of California legislation that was pending or he was interested in writing.
Well, some of our listeners are probably, star groupies and would like me to ask the question, did you ever meet Jane Fonda?
Never met Jane Fonda in that capacity, but I had a very good friend who lived in the same area as Jane Fonda, so I would see Jane Fonda all the time in Santa Monica.
Beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then you said you moved on to another private hospital, St. Francis, I believe.
Yes, in Linwood, California.
And you were then doing a program for children, mm-hmm. specifically.
I was basically running their child psychiatry division.
Okay. All right. And it's hard for me, and I'm sure for most of our listeners, to get our head around the idea of the numbers of people who might be involved. Los Angeles is a huge area, and I'm sure there's many, many children and adolescents that need help. How many people or children would a group like yours see in a given year or month? How can you put some handle on it?
Yeah, I can remember because I used to have a responsibility of turning in statistics to the main hospital. So I do remember we saw about 2,000 people, 2,000 to 3,000, let's say about 2,500 people a year. And again, they were children, adolescents, and family members.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today, Daryl Tidwell, president of the Hospice Foundation for Jefferson Healthcare. So, Daryl, we are now getting to a question that everyone is probably wondering about. You're talking about your long career in Los Angeles in social work and mental health. And how did you end up here in Port Townsend? What happened?
Well, prior to moving here in 2017, it's been 4 years as of last Saturday that I've lived in Port Townsend. Yay, yay, yay. The last 4 years of my residency in Los Angeles, I was the primary caretaker for my mother. And as she began to physically deteriorate, but mentally all there.
That's great.
Yeah. I was the primary caretaker for her. I took her to her doctor's appointments, all of those things, managed sort of her living in our family home by herself. My intro to hospice services was really through her life, and she deteriorated to the point at the age of 94 where a doctor said to me that I didn't know, we had to hospitalize her abruptly at one point, and the doctor said to me, your mom's going to die of cancer, so I'm assigning her to hospice care. So that was my
very gracious,
and similar to what we see on the medical programs on TV, he was surrounded by, you know, his three or four interns, all with a pad, and so what happened for me was that, boom, that was my introduction to hospice care, and
okay, well, this is probably just as good a point as any to describe what is hospice care. A lot of people have heard the term, but they don't really know what it is.
Hospice care is really a philosophy of care within the medical community, and it's specialized care to enable one at the end stage of their life to continue in a pain-free existence with the hope of dignity and surrounded by their loved ones. So it's really about comfort of that person who has been medically determined to have a finite amount of time to live, usually about 6 months or less. And people often get hospice care, the term hospice care, mixed up with palliative care.
Yes.
And palliative care is similar, but palliative care does not have a time limit on it. So you can think of it in stages. People go into palliative care really for comfort and care and to feel better, but they don't have an end stage date. So you can think of a person who has cancer, who has been in that situation for several months, past 6 months. Hospice care is for the end stage of life.
But, you know, you can't really tell. Like, I had an aunt who was under hospice care for over 3 years, and yet her doctors all agreed that, you know, she only had 3 months or whatever it was, and you can't predict it exactly.
Yeah, you can't. There are those incidents in that way, but in terms of a general difference, palliative care is not time-limited. Hospice care is.
So generally speaking, your experience with hospice, even though you were introduced sort of abruptly, was a good one with your mother?
Oh, I had a great experience with hospice. I was already providing day services for my mom, day and night services for my mom prior to her immediate deterioration. And then I was able to have the day and night care staff work with the hospice staff when the hospice team came on. So hospice is a great opportunity for ensuring that your loved one is comforted, and in my mom's case, the last week of her life, she was at home, and she took her last breath watching the flowers, the roses that she took care of outside her bedroom window.
And so what are some of the services that hospice might perform?
Well, again, I'm not a layperson. I want to make the I am a layperson, but I wanted to make the distinction that I'm representing the Hospice Foundation, and we don't provide direct services. Our mission is to support Jefferson Healthcare's hospice program, and our mission is to really raise funds to support them. We are an advocacy for Jefferson Healthcare's hospice program, and we want to provide community education, and we also want to cultivate benefactors. That's
okay.
Our mission.
Yeah. So, yeah, I will stress that too. The foundation essentially raises money to support hospice services for Jefferson Healthcare.
Correct. And we are a separate entity from Jefferson Healthcare. We are a separate not-for-profit agency, 501c3 designation.
Okay, excellent. Now, the COVID virus or pandemic, whatever we want to call it, impacted everything. I'm sure it impacted hospice care over the past, let's call it 2 years for sake of argument. What was the impact, or what is the impact?
Well, it's still going on, unfortunately,
right,
as we see today. But last year, and again, I can only speak in a cursive way around the services that were offered, but I do know the services were truncated. There was a time when none of the staff could go into someone's home.
Right.
So we're very fortunate in Port Townsend and Jefferson County to have a program here that has a motto of no one dies alone. And so they really tried very hard to adhere to that motto, and we supported that. So to answer your question, it really affected the staff's ability to go into patients' homes. It affected the volunteer corps to go into patients' homes, and that's really who we support. We support also specialized comfort therapy services like massage therapists, hairstylers. All of those people obviously could not go into someone's home.
Right.
And so it was tough. It was tough those very early months. Now they're responding, but over the last few months, they're back in the home. But now with the mandates changing, it creates another challenge for the hospice program at Jefferson Healthcare.
If someone is listening and they want to help the hospice program, what's the avenue or a couple of avenues they could do?
Well, they can. I'll give you a couple avenues. You can go directly onto Jefferson Healthcare Hospital's website and connect to the hospice program there. They can contact us through the foundation, through our website. Our website is www.hospicefoundationjhc.org. Should I repeat that?
Go ahead and repeat it, all right?
Okay, Hospice Foundation, jhc.org. They can email me at Daryl, D-E-R-R-E-L-L, at hospicefoundationjhc.org.
Okay. Now, Daryl, unfortunately, we're getting low on time here, but you never answered the question, which was, how did you end up in Port Townsend? You very clearly explained how you got involved with hospice through your mother and all of that. But at some point, you left L.A. and came up here. And so how'd that happen?
Well, I used the verb escaped, not left.
Yeah, okay. Escape from L.A., that was a movie.
Yeah, I was just really around 2015, 16, I was really tired of L.A. And I just wanted a change of my pace of life. Mm-hmm. And so I had friends, dear friends, who moved up here 2 years prior in 2015, visited them, was already house hunting electronically, and looked at a few homes that weekend. On the way down to back to SeaTac, put a bid on a house that I saw that weekend. I was here 2 months later.
That's amazing.
I was here with my husband, and I moved here 2 months later.
Wow.
It was that fast.
That's really quick.
It didn't give me time to think about it and obsess about it.
You had Had you already resigned your job, or were you still
No,
working?
I had to resign my job.
Wow. That was rather...
He was already resigned, so that it worked out.
That let him do all the moving stuff.
Yeah, and he was very good at that.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's how I got here, and, and how I joined the Hospice Foundation here. I met a couple, and they invited me to the annual breakfast that occurs in June. So I attended the breakfast in 2018, that June, and joined in October 2018. I became the president in October 2020.
And how big is the board?
The board, we have 11 people. We're still holding spots for interested people, and they're welcome to people listening to us now are welcome to contact me. And so it's a fun board. It's a fun board because we have people from all walks of life. We have accountants, lawyers, Blue City people, all pretty much retired, but not everyone. So everyone pulls their talents together toward our mission. And we are a working board, meaning we have a strategic plan every year on how we want to implement our mission and how we want to continue to support Jefferson Healthcare Hospice.
Okay, and, now probably, like everyone else, you adjusted a bit during the pandemic with meetings on Zoom and things like that.
We learned Zoom.
Yeah, I think we all
We learned Zoom. And we met all last year on Zoom, and which is quite interesting. Quite interesting.
Wow. Okay. You know, I know we've barely scratched the surface about hospice, but the show is only a half hour long. I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today, Daryl Tidwell, the president of the Hospice Foundation for Jefferson Healthcare. For more information about hospice, be sure and go to their website. One last time, give us the website.
HospiceFoundationJHC.org.
Okay. In addition to thanking Daryl for being a guest on the show, I also want to thank Sonny Flores, editor and producer of Our Town. Sonny will use his electronic skills, he's a technological whiz. He will refine and edit what we're saying so we sound ever so intelligent and eloquent. I want to thank you, listener, for sticking with us through the long, dreary days of COVID. We're limping through this crisis together. KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, is a community radio station. Everyone who's here is a volunteer. We give our time because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need you, dear listener. We need volunteers. We need donations. We all want to stay afloat. Just like you, we'd really like to be on the other side of this pandemic, but it hasn't quite happened yet. So, listener, stay safe, stay healthy. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM, for more dynamic, informative community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Sonny Flores.